Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Hey everybody, on this episode of the Riverdale After Show, we're breaking down Season 3, Episode 14, Chapter 49, Fire Walk With Me. Archie gets outwitted, Jughead and Veronica do power moves, Betty turns arsonist, and Riverdale loses one of their own. We're going to talk about all that and more next.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Riverdale After Show, breaking down every episode of Riverdale, airing Wednesday nights there on the CW. I'm Frank Moran.
I'm Zach Peter. Hi guys.
Hi everybody, I'm Maggie Clark. I'm filling in today, and I'm also in the live chat, so chat with me.
There you go. Yes, Elena and Sam are on assignment, so they won't be back with us here this week. But hopefully next week, fingers crossed, all works out well. But in the meantime, folks, like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Give it a thumbs up while you're there. Mm-hmm. And as Maggie said, the live chat is up and running. So jump in and share your thoughts about everything that's happening. Now, I guess we will get into the specifics of the episode in just a moment. But if everybody's, you know, if you're a Riverdale fan, if you're just a fan of just pop culture in general or television, we knew that there was an unfortunate passing this week, and there's no easy way to get into it, but we'll talk a little bit about that. And that is Luke Perry passed away at 52 due to a stroke this week. But much too young. He's been around, he came onto the screen for Beverly Hills 90210, but been very, working a lot more in television than he'd done in film, but he's done a few films. Fifth Element, 8 Seconds. He's also going to be up in the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the new Quentin Tarantino film.
He's had a pretty strong career. I mean, and he's been relevant over, you know, he was really popular in 90210, so he really kind of hit that 80s, 90s demographic. And then I think even the younger generations, like the millennials, really got to know him and see him now on Riverdale and some of his more recent work. So I think it's definitely, you know, it's a testament to his talent and the longevity of his career, and he's definitely going to be missed.
Oh my gosh, it's just absolutely heartbreaking to lose this warm, kind soul. Everyone on social media has just been saying that he was such a wonderful part, the heart and soul of Riverdale, and it's just such a loss. And he had 2 children and a fiance and so many other family members, and we just want to express our condolences to anyone affected by the loss of Lou Perry, of course, all of his fans, the cast and crew, and his family and friends.
And it's one thing, I always enjoyed watching him, but and I was like, he seems like a nice guy, but seeing just the outpouring of all the fellow support actors or family friends that knew him, just sharing all these really kind and warm and big-hearted stories about him. Just like, wow. Yeah.
I was looking forward to seeing him in the 90210 reboot.
Oh, me too. They announced it the day of his stroke.
Yeah.
I also have this statement from Riverdale, if you'd like me to read it.
Sure, go ahead.
Sure. So this was the statement from the show officially, from the executive producers, Warner Brothers, and the CW. And they say, "We are deeply saddened to learn today of the passing of Luke Perry, a beloved member of the Riverdale, Warner Brothers, and CW family. Luke was everything you would hope he would be, an incredibly caring, consummate professional with a giant heart and a true friend to all. A father figure and mentor to the show's young cast, Luke was incredibly generous, and he infused the set with love and kindness. Our thoughts are with Luke's family during this most difficult time."
And as you may have seen at the end of this episode, they did do a little dedication to Luke Perry at the end of the episode, and that'll continue for the rest of Season 3. So, now, of course, that has to deal with it. There's certainly one thing about with an actor, but then also a television character as well.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, Riverdale may have to figure out how they want to handle what would happen with Fred Andrews.
Yeah, and how they're going to, write him out of the show now.
And it's varied from TV series to TV series. When they've lost an actor that has played an important part of a show, how they've addressed that. And some have kind of reflected the real life subject of their passing with that character in the show. Others have just, you know, they're off visiting somewhere else and they will not come back. They've handled it in both ways. So,
yeah.
Right.
I think what they, I would love to see as a viewer is to actually see his character pass as well, so that the cast and everybody gets to do like a true tribute and, you know, share their condolences through the art and through the show.
I think that that would be really healing for them. And I'm thinking that that's what they may do. But Derek Hogan in the chat is wondering if they may recast him.
No.
I don't think that that would happen. No. But I think a lot of people would be upset if that was the case. I think that it would be more graceful if the cast was able to mourn his passing through the show as well as in real life.
Yeah, I think it's very cathartic. Like, we saw them do it on Glee when Corey passed away, and like had that whole tribute episode to him.
Sure.
I think, yeah, there's definitely an opportunity for them to honor him in that way. I think recasting him doesn't do him justice, or his character justice.
Yeah. I'll be curious to see in terms of just the character of Archie, because he's still a minor, almost 18, but without a father there.
Maybe we'll bring back Molly Ringwald. Yeah. Maybe now we have her in the budget.
That's what some people are saying in the chat, that maybe they'll bring back his mom. Also, there was a mention of one of the executive producers. I know this is a little bit of news, but he mentioned today, one of the executive producers, that all of the episodes moving forward will all be dedicated to Luke Perry and his memory. So that's a good way to honor him.
Yeah. So we will see what Riverdale, they did close down production for a few days. One just to deal with just the emotional bits of losing Luke Perry, but then also I think trying to figure out just logistically how they're going to approach the rest of the season.
As far as I know, it's still shut down.
Oh,
I don't think they've restarted production.
It's so we'll see. We'll keep you posted on how they decide to approach the end of the season.
They have to be at the taping of the end of the season, though, right? Because if we're halfway through this through like the spring season, then they have to be pretty close to. I mean, I would only imagine there are only like two or three episodes they have left to film.
Yeah, I would agree. So it'll be
maybe Chad Michael Murray takes him out on the show.
Oh. I don't know. No, would you want to see him have been find out that Fred died of sort of violent means or passing away quietly in his sleep or something like that?
I would prefer quietly in his sleep, but I feel like nothing happens quietly in Riverdale.
That's true. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what this does for the show going forward.
Hopefully it's a death with a lot of dignity, whatever they decide to do.
And I would have no reason to doubt that they wouldn't do that. I mean, regardless of, you know, just whatever you thought about Luke and his esteem that the cast had for them, but just the character of Fred.
Fred, yeah.
Was one of the few upstanding, you know, very moral centers of the show. So I feel like they would try to serve that character well when they're saying goodbye to him. But there is no easy way to transition, but we will do our best as we get into this particular episode here. Before we break into it detail, Maggie, what did you think overall?
Oh, gosh. Switching gears. Overall, I wasn't thrilled with this episode. I think that it was really disjointed. I felt like there was a lot going on, so many different pieces of the puzzle, but nothing really seemed to move the storyline forward too much. I didn't really love it. It was not my favorite episode. I'm definitely a huge fan of the show, but I do like that they did have one kind of shocking moment at the end with Betty. But up until then, I was like, all right, what's the point of this episode? What's going on here?
Yeah, it did feel like a lot of unnecessary storylines or just like drag-ons of current storylines that didn't really fit the overall picture, or at least where they're trying to go. I think I agree with Maggie that it felt more of like a filler episode minus the one scene where Betty burns the house down.
You know, I would wonder about in terms of when they're breaking these storylines down, and do they feel like, well, like the serpents, they're kind of rudderless, which I would, you know, agree, because we've seen even the last episode, they've kind of been decimated, even though it is weird to see how, where they've all gone to, but they realize, I don't know if they, as they're breaking it down, they realize, oh, we need to change the serpents into something else for the rest of the season. Wait, how can we get into that? Maybe that's how they tie in Archie's storyline, because I feel like Archie's storyline was the weakest of what we got out of here. Yeah. And I don't know if that was just to set up the serpent storyline.
I really hate what they've done with Archie and what they've done with Kevin this season. Like, Kevin is such a waste of a character to have him just join the farm. Like, I understand I'm hoping there's like a longer storyline of like how he had to go through this emotional turmoil and he was lost and he went to the farm and now he at the end is saved. But I just hate how Archie is just always, like, such a ding-dong every episode and, like, keeps falling into these messes that he creates for himself.
Aw.
Well, but I would agree with, like, with Kevin. I feel like we only really get any sort of focus on Kevin at, like, emotional points mm-hmm. where it's Moose leaving him. They're almost killed.
Yeah.
Now it's this episode. All of a sudden he's joining the farm and he's walking on coals. It's like we never see like those moments that you're describing. We never get to see that how he's feeling with the ramifications of Moose, somebody he really genuinely loved.
Yeah.
He's leaving.
Like a really discarded character that we bring back every week to just go through like the turmoil that never really comes to fruition of, you know, his blossom.
I think his journey is always meant to further the storyline of the core four in some way.
But I just want so much more. Like, I feel like he's such a good character that we can really develop it. Like, give me less Josie, okay? Like, I'm a little over her. We can pass on her scenes and her love affair with Archie.
I feel like they're showing Kevin joining the farm to kind of show how isolated Betty is becoming because her other three friends are all involved in their own stuff. And then she goes to Kevin to be this rational friend in her time of need when, you know, her mom and her sister are just joining this cult. And then she finds that she really has no one to talk to about this situation. The person that she goes to talk to about it is also sucked into this cult.
Yeah, I don't know if I need, if it would have been better, because last week we get Betty talking to Kevin, like, help me make phone calls to former farmies. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, I've been talking to Evelyn. I really like what they're saying. Would it have been better if you would have seen, at least in one other episode leading up to that, just even a quick conversation between mm-hmm. Evelyn and Kevin, just at least seed that a little bit better? I don't know.
He's just an underutilized character that I think we could really
see
more of.
Mm-hmm.
So we start seeing a little bit more with the farm. And we must just talk about this one.
Farmies. There.
Yeah, these farmies. We've got Evelyn with everybody in like one of the chemistry labs, you know, putting their hands over Bunsen burners. We've got them getting ready for Alice to sell her house.
Oh, it's awful.
What
is Betty going to live at the farm now? What is she going to do?
I feel like that's the intent.
Kind of the option,
Maybe she would, you know, just be roomies with Veronica.
Yeah, they all offered kind of up a place for her to stay. Right. I can't imagine her actually going to this Farmville land. I mean, this Farmville's worse than, like, the Facebook Farmville that we all had to live through in, like, 2007.
Oh, I forgot about that.
But I feel like, I don't know, I don't want her to go to the farm.
Well, also, I think it'd be really traumatic for her on multiple levels, but especially now that the farm is at the Sisters of Quiet Mercy former location where Betty was locked up, I feel like it would be just extra traumatic for her to have to go back there just because she's a minor and she should be under the supervision of her mother, who now will live there.
What do you two make of the scene where we see Betty, who's supposed to be up in her room packing, has the candle there, and she almost starts putting her hand over there, but it's interrupted with Alice. Do you feel like, is that a sign of her kind of, should I try to take a leap into what this farmer's talking about, or something else?
I think it's only natural for her to question that at this point. Like, everybody seems to be turning. She seems to be the only one that's kind of fighting whatever this farm situation is, that I think it's natural for her to now be in that place where she's kind of questioning whether or not this is the bad cult that she thinks it is.
Yeah, she's probably just really curious.
All right, so if I put a candle out here, would either of you want to put your hand over it?
No way.
No, Zach, come on.
No, I don't want to ruin my hands.
All right.
Well, maybe if my hands were really cold, I'd do like a little bit of this.
Yeah, but just not. No. Nope. All right, well, we do get to see Betty watch Kevin walk over the coals.
Yes.
Have either of you ever been interested or have had the opportunity to walk over coals?
No walking over coals, no walking over glass. Like, none of that stuff has ever been attractive to me.
So when I first saw that, I was thinking, okay, is this like, you know, supposed to be a penance for their sins? I didn't really understand what the point of it was.
I thought it was more about like resilience and like being able to like mind over matter, walk over this, that you can see the strength of your mind. Because she kept telling him, like, as you're walking over it, don't pay attention to the heat. Just pretend you're walking over like a cool stream or something.
Because I know Anthony Robbins does that a lot at his retreats. Part of it is they will set out the like coals just like that and you will walk over them. That's supposed to be a really empowering moment, like Zach was saying, that you believe that, you know, your mind is your greatest tool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but then 5 minutes later, your feet burned.
Well, no. I mean, you've successfully navigated that difficult thing.
Man, that's not something that I would ever be interested in.
Well, guys, I've put coals right here. Right. In the room. Let's so give it a come on, Maggie, you first. I would try it once. Why not? I mean, what do you have to lose?
Your feet.
My feet are already. Who cares?
I think
about
if
my feet,
enough people. Yeah, I mean, I'm not fully against it. Only because I've seen that and I've seen so many people do it. And I guess I like the idea of having the mind over matter. But I would definitely walk into it very skeptical.
I think I would, if I was, say, an Anthony Robbins thing, I would feel like, much like if I was on a reality show, I feel like there are so many safety nets in place that, like, nothing's ever really going to happen to me. But if I were out in the middle of the woods in Riverdale with a bunch of farmies that have set this up, maybe I might question it a little bit.
And the redhead just looks crazy.
She
just looks like she's off her rocker and, like, is not mentally stable.
What, when she goes into
too many fizzle rocks.
Gives Betty that threat about, hey, you write that article about us.
Yeah.
We're going to steal all your dirt.
See?
But the look on her
she's
face.
She's scary.
Yeah.
And her eyes don't help it either because they're big.
And I just can't believe that Alice disclosed all of that information. She literally was like, yeah, we murdered someone. We had his body, you know, just disintegrate in the woods by the now sheriff of Riverdale. Like, those are really major crimes that she just announced to this whole group. Mm-hmm. And now, yes, of course, they're going to hang that over Betty's head.
I mean, I guess, yeah, it is the word of Alice against Betty at that point, because there really is no physical evidence. Fred used lie on that body, so there's no remains to be found.
Well, and FP is kind of the show. Like, he's the one that would be investigating this.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Obviously,
not if
he's
they got,
not
like
trying.
The FBI.
Oh, the FBI. I know that we have many more topics to discuss in the show, but a hot episode of the Riverdale Gazette came through, and oh my gosh, Zach.
Yes.
But there's some hot news that we need to share.
There is some hot news that we need to share because we love you guys so much and we know you love us too. We want you to make sure you subscribe to this channel and make sure you watch Riverdale every single week because you love watching Frank and myself and Maggie, who's joining us this week, and Alana and Sam. So you're going to want to stay up to date with us on the AfterBuzz YouTube channel. So be sure to subscribe. Don't worry about those pesky notifications because you can always update those in your settings. And if you're listening on iTunes, be sure to give us a 5-star review and let us know how much you love listening to the Riverdale After Show. 5 stars because I think there's a new rule that, like, you can't give less than 5, right?
That's true. Or we think less of you.
That's yeah, or we think less of you. But we also won't think less of you if you leave a comment on the YouTube video below. If you're watching us, we love to engage with you guys. We got you here in the live chat, which Maggie's been following. So please, subscribe, comment, leave us a good review on iTunes. We love it, and we know you love us. And thank you for making us the ESPN of TV Talk.
So our next two characters did some power moves. So before we break down each of the storylines, I'm going to ask the two of you, which one you thought was the better... wielded their power better, was smarter and craftier. Was it Betty, or was it Jughead, or was it Veronica?
Definitely Veronica.
I would say Veronica because she's, like, most improved right now, just because she's always falling into, like, victim to her dad or, you know, now Jughead's mom, that I feel like she kind of finally found her own footing and came up with an idea on her own that outsmarted both of them.
Yeah, she's learning how to play their game.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, I was like, you go, girl, with the 5% shaved off from one of them, then 5% shaved off from the other, and then she blocks them because the two of them were getting too comfortable, you know, saying that it was their club and drinking all the booze, Gladys. So, yeah, I really appreciated Veronica's strong journey in this episode.
So, I don't know, like, with Hiram... He's trying to, both Hiram and Gladys see this as kind of their own club now,
yeah,
to use this how they will. So Hiram wants to use it to kind of wheel and deal other people that are going to invest in the prison. But I feel like if I was going to, I don't know, I mean, if you're trying to get somebody to buy into your business, are you still going to let them act like a jerk at wherever you take them?
I mean, I was even a little confused that Hiram took this big client to his daughter's club who's underage and serving alcohol to everyone. Like, I was like, this hidden speakeasy that just doesn't make any sense. I mean, and where did Hiram even find this random million dollar donor?
And he also kind of goads the guy too to start smack talking Gladys.
Mm-hmm. See, that's where I think he caught on to Veronica and he kind of knew what she was up to. That's why he intentionally wanted to have the guy antagonize Jughead's mom. I think he knew what was up, and he was trying to just push Veronica into an uncomfortable situation where she had to choose, because she's naturally going to choose him.
All right, Maggie, what do you think of Gladys's singing voice?
Ooh, at first I was like, oh gosh, Gladys. And then I was like, okay, I get it. She's kind of got this like former smoker, loungy voice. Maybe it can work. But I didn't dig it. It was okay. It wasn't horrible, but it was not my cup of tea.
I don't know, because I guess, like, to go with your point, Zach, it is you're performing for what are essentially just teenagers.
Yeah.
So it's like, why, and the kind of the random adults.
Yeah,
that show
like
up,
that's like, kind of sad. Right. Like for her to be like, I want to, like, first of all, to come and be drinking all the booze from a teenager's bar, and then to be coming in and be like, I want to sing on stage in front of all your high school friends. Like, it's just like, really, we don't have anything better to do. Like, don't you have a drug empire to run?
Yeah. And we're so used to seeing Josie up there and occasionally Veronica singing. And Josie she crushes it when she sings up there at Le Blondoy.
I can do less of Josie.
Oh, see, I'm like Josie. I like her.
Josie Grosie, bye.
Oh. Wow. All right. We're going to get to Josie's appearance in a second. I'm going to find out exactly what Zach cannot stand about her. But wrapping up Veronica's storyline, she decides to enroll the Pretty Poisons to be her muscle for the club.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Me too.
Yeah, I like how the Pretty Poisons are kind of developing. And Cheryl's now kind of having this power struggle, because obviously Cheryl's always the alpha. I like that they've now joined forces. And it looks like without Cheryl, because we didn't see her at the club. But
she was tired.
She was tired. She had a long day of painting her nails. I like this partnership.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I felt like there was, in this episode in general, a lot of blackmailing. And Cheryl was like pulling her blackmail card with, well, you know, where's headquarters going to be if it's not going to be at my house and I have a pool? So I don't know. This power struggle is I think, going to continue in the next few episodes between TT and Cheryl.
Do you feel like, I mean, I guess Cheryl must be the type of person that says, even though we're partners, we both know I'm the real big partner.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's, I don't know if Cheryl was able just to willingly just say like, no, we're of equal say, or even if she would have, when she gave TT the Pretty Poisons.
The real big partner is smart enough to make you think that we're equal partners when in reality you hold the power.
Yeah.
Where Cheryl constantly flexes, and I think that's her weakness, is that her ego is so big and she has to flex and she has to kind of prove that she's higher than you, where someone like Hiram is really smart because like he lets you think you have the upper hand until he swipes in and gets you.
So, I mean, I guess it's like somebody giving you their business and then coming in and constantly criticizing how you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, no, you gave this to me, so you can't just
micromanage it.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting to see, because it seemed like for a long time, the Cheryl and Tony relationship was like, oh, right, this is a really kind of very positive kind of relationship. But I feel like you were saying, Zach, we're starting to see some cracks.
Yeah, the Pretty Poisons may break them. And External Shockwave 3 says, I'm thinking Choni won't last. Oh, man. Because I've always liked the two of them together. I thought that was kind of a fun couple. But I think that the Pretty Poisons may break them up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know. How do you feel about it in terms of relationships on these types of shows, whether it's a soap opera or kind of, you know, like the soapy kind of format?
They're not designed to last. They're designed to make you like feel and hurt when they break up, and then make you want them to come back together. And it's just always playing with your heart.
Yeah, I mean, there's that. Or would you rather see them kind of like coming up with reasons for them to kind of always break up and come back together? Or would you rather see the conflict be external? It's the two of them always having to face together, but always having to
against
face
the world.
Somebody else. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'd rather see them together.
Yeah, so do I. I feel like the back and forth gets a little tiresome for me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I guess we'll see what happens. But at the end, I don't know if both Hiram and Gladys coming to Le Bon Nuit and just having the Pretty Poison saying, no, you can't get in unless you have an engraved invitation, was enough for them to go like,
no.
All right, I'll walk out.
See, at least the serpents are like 6 feet tall with muscles. Yeah. Like nothing against this girl gang. We obviously know they can throw a good bow and arrow, like... I don't think that's intimidating to like Hiram and his group of thugs, or Gladys and like her gargoyle gang. Like, I don't think it looks like a strong enough muscle to stop any of them. I don't even think at this point the serpents would feel like a strong enough muscle to stop either of them.
I don't know, like with Hiram, I would almost rather have the beat with Hiram where, and it being a really long game, but that he feels like he's grooming Veronica constantly. So when she's learning these lessons, he almost has that sense of pride, like, all right, she's getting it. So that when he gets turned away, there's almost like a smile on his face, like, all right, yeah, she's getting it. But and he says that kind of like, and then he walks off.
Yeah, I don't think he has pride in it. I think he, again, likes to flex and likes to be the head honcho. Mm-hmm. And he's not ready for his Miha to take over yet.
Also, he's like 100% healed, it seems like. You know, it seems like a couple of episodes ago he was on his deathbed. And now he's like, oh, look at me. I'm just back to normal, wheeling and dealing.
It's those wrestling muscles. You know, I mean, that's, everything's just firm and tight. It's, yeah, keeps them going.
It's like getting mauled by a bear. You just snap back like that in Riverdale.
So we see Jughead have to make his power move for the serpents. And he finally gets Kurtz out because that Kurtz guy was annoying.
Oh, I didn't like him at
all. I didn't like him at all.
He's just a Debbie Downer.
Yeah.
He needs to go join the farm.
So do you think that Jughead's solution was a good one? Where he basically just deputizes all of them?
I mean, it worked, and the cash incentive was obviously nice. It was obviously smart enough to get the other gargoyle gang to join them.
Yeah, he needed something to unite this group, and I think that that was the only way to do it. Just, yeah, the incentive of college credit.
Money.
Yeah, money, and just a purpose. Because he was saying, oh, the serpents are better when they're task-oriented. Well, it seems like the gargoyles are better when they're task-oriented, too, when they're making fizzle rocks. So who knows? Maybe this would take them away from being two separate groups, and it will actually unite them. Because the serpents, as we've seen, their numbers have really dwindled. So they really needed this union of the two gangs in order to stay relevant.
Now, while we watched the episode, there was a point where Jughead referred to FP as the Serpent Emeritus.
Oh my God.
I saw Maggie's reaction for that. She was like, what is this?
I loved it. I was like, are we in a sorority? And like, you know, he's the one that he used to be president. And well, I guess it'd be a fraternity, but you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I just thought it was pretty funny that they use that term. You know, they use these like old timey, like very official phrases in their gang where they, you know, are all rough and tough and wear leather. I just like it. It's funny.
I don't know how, I mean, they hang up Fang upside down. And yet we never see any kind of repercussions to that at all, especially when they're on thin ice with Principal Weatherby.
I mean, yeah, I think that was an opportunity for Weatherby to kind of come in and regulate. But I think, you know, at the same, they couldn't really retaliate when you have like one of your gang members hung upside down. Like, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Obviously, we know who holds the power there.
That seriously made me crazy. That moment was so psychotic. I was like, what are you thinking? Like, you're in the middle. It's probably like fourth period and they're hanging this student upside down. Like, he could have literally murdered him and there'd be blood and guts all over the hallway. I mean, this is just absolutely crazy.
No, I think he would have survived. By next week, he would have been fine, you know?
Yeah.
He would have picked his guts back up, put his like brain back together.
All good.
And then next week, he would have been fine. And he would have been joining the farm.
But would just, that was such a psychotic moment. I was like, why is this a thing?
Well, do either of you disagree that this is not going to be the last we've seen of Kurtz?
No, yeah. I don't. I would hope so, but
he's the worst.
He's pretty bad, but he's a good antagonist.
Yeah. So now we have Zach's favorite storyline. I can't wait to dive into it with him. And that is Archie being a dum-dum.
Again, that's like his recurring thing. This season, yes.
Yeah, not in season one and two.
In season one and two, he was more of like the hero, the noble one. And then even when he did get caught into a mess, like he always found his way out of it. But like now he's just like, he just makes consistently dumb decisions that get him into a big mess. And then he doesn't know how to get out of it. And his friends have to help him around him. And it's just like they're deflating Archie.
Well, in this storyline this week, it was really playing on Archie's kindness and his, you know, warm heart and how he saw himself and this little boy, Ricky, and how he wanted to save him and teach him how to protect himself because he saw Ricky as the younger version of him. So, I mean, it was very noble what he was doing. And then it ended up that apparently this kid is like this brilliant little mastermind that had this plan all along.
We all work at this gym and nobody has noticed this kid that's been there for months.
That's true. Like, I did wonder
this kid's, I mean, come on. I figured that out in the first 5 minutes of meeting this kid that he was up to something bigger. You know, I'm like, why? How does Archie still have like this big heart and this dumb brain to like keep falling into these messes that like he doesn't seem to like figure it out? Like, I think at this point he should be more skeptical and ask more questions and try to do a little more investigation and digging.
But why
he needs to put
his
Betty Cooper cap on and like really kind of, you know, figure out the situation before trusting so naively.
But why would he think this like little boy would be after him?
But this is also the guy that is at a boxing club for how many weeks and is not paying any dues. Right. And so when the manager of the club says, "Hey, you know, you really got to start paying." What? I do? I don't know. What were you expecting? You can't just come to a gym for free.
Yeah.
For as long as you want. Somebody's going to ask you to pay a membership fee. And then who cleans up a gym but turns off all the lights? Let's just clean up in the dark.
Right? Like, I can't with Archie sometimes.
And then, are we going to talk about
Please.
The stabbing?
Go for it.
Okay, so then, okay, I was writing notes when the stabbing happened, but he got stabbed in the side, right? With a gigantic knife.
Well, I don't know if it was stabbed or he sliced.
It was a slice. Yeah. Okay, that makes more sense because, you know, we saw Fred, which, you know, was hard for all of us to see Fred on the screen. But, you know, he's like, "Oh, you're all patched up. You're fine." And I was like, didn't he just get stabbed with a giant kitchen knife and now he's fine? I mean, it's just, it's crazy how many times Archie has been injured this season, you know, with the boxing matches and then in the prison and the bear and now a knife. It's like, my God, he's just really getting destroyed and torn up. When is he, his beautiful body going to be protected?
That's when he is talking with the kid and he's like, "You know, I've been branded too. I've also been mauled by a bear. I just wanted him to show that."
It's like, Archie's riddled with scars.
But I'll give it for the kid, though. I mean, Richie was like three steps ahead of him because he sets it up to have these gargoyles bang on the window at Pops while he's sitting there by himself to run off, but knows enough, like, I'm going to play and make this really elaborate drawing and leave this behind. And this is going to suck Archie in more. The kid was way ahead of Archie.
I know. How is this kid so smart?
He was too smart and just like...
And then I'm going to write his name in paint on the wall and I'm going to write my name too. It was just really clever that he set this up. So I'm just feeling like maybe somebody else was assisting this kid because how old was he? What, like 11? How is he smart enough to think of this whole elaborate plan to string Archie along by himself?
Archie, an 11-year-old outsmarted you. Like at this point, like you're losing chips, homie.
I think he had help.
And I mean, we do find out it's Joaquin's brother.
Yeah.
So, our dear leader parted Joaquin.
Aw, the Mac 727, hi, says having a big heart and wanting to help a kid in trouble is what makes Archie human. I agree with you.
It's what's going to get Archie killed. Like, that, Archie ain't going to last the longer he plays these games.
At this point, if both of you, pretend both of you are living in Riverdale right now, at this point, 4 years in, you've moved there. You say you've been living there 5 years. Would you still want to be living there?
No.
I feel like there's nothing great about this town that makes me want to stay there.
We talked about this, Frank, last time I was on the show, that there's nothing to do there. I mean, at least they have Le Bon Nuit now and they have Pops, but they don't have the movie theater anymore. There's nothing to do except, you know, get in trouble and try and solve crimes and hang out with the farm or play G&G. So it's like, this is not a place I would want to live, but these people, you know, might not be able to leave.
It's home. Yeah, I guess they can't. The writers won't let them leave.
That's true. Yeah, and speaking of Josie, because she does pop up a little bit in Archie's storyline to talk about, you know, help him track down the source of this letter opening and closing. And then she shows up in Betty's storyline to talk about Kevin. And I would rather have almost seen a family life scene of Josie and Kevin at home with their parents.
Yes.
Than just to hear Josie just tell Betty about it.
Yes.
I think it's awkward, the parents dating. I just think it feels awkward every time we see them.
Well, they're married.
I don't think they have chemistry. Like, I think they're just an awkward couple to watch on TV.
But they're married in real life.
Oh, well, then they need to work on that.
I have no idea on that.
No, they have no chemistry. Yeah, they don't have any chemistry. Kevin's, like, lost in the woods. And Josie, I can't get into Josie. You know, I like Josie as a character. I hate her as, like, Archie's lover. Like, she just doesn't. They also have bad chemistry together. Like, if you want me to feel it.
I don't think they're going to last. No.
I mean, and
Archie and Josie?
No, Archie and Josie are not going to last. No. It's just a temporary hold.
Especially if the Kathy Keene pilot makes it to a series.
Right.
It's hard to see how much she's still going to be involved in Riverdale. Even though that takes place in the future of the Riverdale universe, she's busy filming that every week.
Sure.
How often is she going to have the... I mean, although, I mean, admit, let's be honest, we haven't really seen her pop in a lot in Riverdale.
Even I'm praying to the gargoyle gods.
All right. I feel this way. I am tired of this Griffin and Gargoyle storyline. I so desperately want it to end. And I feel like this is the problem with Riverdale trying to stretch out a mystery, even with like last year's Black Hood, for 22 episodes. It's just too long. I'd rather would have them to come up with the definitive conclusion at the mid-season break and then give us a second mystery.
A new
storyline,
yeah.
We totally agree. And I thought that that's what was going to happen when they realized that Tall Boy was the Gargoyle King, and then, you know, he was killed and everything, and then the drug trade and all that, and Hiram was shot. I thought that was it. Okay, we're putting G&G to bed. Now we're going to move on and just focus on the farm or something else. I'm totally with you, Frank, on this, because it's just like, okay, we've exhausted this storyline. We're done. I'm sick of G&G. How do you guys feel?
Yeah, they could have crammed the rest of it into that last season and wrapped it up there. And then this season could have really been the mystery of the farm and who's really behind it. And, like, I would have rather have seen more of the farm than this repeat of G&G. It's just, it's done. I'm tired of finding the new person that's behind it and how it's connected to the drug trade. And, like, it's just, it's a retired storyline.
Yeah,
and I'm
exhausted.
Ready to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I ready to go for a lot of new things. But real quick, I mean, I guess don't really have any news and gossip. The one that we did talk about is that we touched about it at the beginning with Luke Perry about Riverdale season three. Every episode was going to be dedicated to him. So we'll just move on to some predictions. Yes, we'll move those.
And now, you're After Buzz TV predictions.
Maggie.
Oh, man.
Put your prognosticator cap on, and what do you see?
Okay, what do I see? Well, we saw in the preview for next episode that it seems like maybe G&G will be put to bed with this new boxing match that Archie is going to start. It seems like he's going to invite anybody to challenge the Red Paladin in the ring to fight to the death, I bet. So, you know, my prediction is that, especially since he's been training with Mr. Keller, I think that he's going to be able to defeat all these people. He's going to say, okay, I played the game. The Red Paladin lives. Let's retire this, you know, what's it called when you have a mark on you? Like, let's retire this mark that I have on me, this actual brand, and move on with our lives. The Red Paladin lives. So I think that finally he's going to get his redemption that way through the boxing match.
Yeah, I agree. I hope he does. I mean, at this point, I would like to see him do something right. I am tired of seeing him continuously make dumb mistakes. And I want to see him kind of become the Archie that we have been building him up to be, but he hasn't fully reached yet. I think I'm really curious to see how they're going to write Luke Perry out. I think they have to kill his character off and just do it in a way that's very honorable, like we all said earlier. And I really hope we do something with Kevin and, like, save him from the farm and, like, save everybody from the farm, because the farm just looks like bad news bears. It's like a bad Tony Robbins on crack.
My only worry with the I love the idea of focusing on Kevin and the farm, but I feel like it's going to be more about Alice and Betty. And then as the episode ends, the last scene for a second will be like, oh, yeah, thanks for rescuing me, guys. It'll just be Kevin. And that'll be like, what?
An afterthought,
All right, great.
That makes sense.
I think I also want to add for predictions, I think we're going to see Dark Betty come out again. Because if it was Betty that lit her home on fire, you have to be pretty twisted to do something like that. And I think she's had it. So I don't think that she's going to get sucked into the farm. I think she's actually going to start really aggressively fighting back. And this is her first step towards that.
Who did not think that that was going to be the result of her walking downstairs into that house holding the candle?
I didn't think she was going to burn the house.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't think
it's like,
so.
You don't have a character come down with a candle, look around, and not expect that house to go up.
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, I was like, she's burning it down.
Oh, you're very perceptive then. Yeah.
Maggie, I wish I had the same optimism for you about the Griffin and Gargoyle storyline. I just know the way Riverdale has dealt with each of their big, long, overarching storylines. I mean, the Black Hood made it all the way to the end of the last episode last season, so I feel like it's going to be the same thing.
No.
The Black Hood made it into this season.
Yeah.
I was like, no more Black Hood.
Maybe they're going to release Betty's dad from jail, and then she's going to live with him, and then they're going to go after the farm together.
Oh, all right. From Maggie's lips to the Riverdale writer room ears. That'd be fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this episode of the Riverdale After Show. Maggie, thank you so much for joining us again. Yes,
thank you.
It's been a delight.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure is all ours, for sure. Now, as always, folks, like us on Facebook, give us 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and thank you, everybody, for hopping in the chat. And if you want to stay in touch with any of us after the show's over, Maggie, where can they find you?
You guys can find me at Maggie Clark on camera on Instagram and at Maggie on camera on Twitter.
Hi, guys. I'm Zach Peter. You can follow me at Just Plain Zach all over the internet.
And follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Happy Go Jackie. Folks, we'll be back here next Wednesday night with an all-new after show dealing with Riverdale. I'm going to put those two words in the other order, the Riverdale After Show, right here on AfterBuzz TV.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.